If you're thinking about it, she's talking about it. Join the conversation at 203-333-9422. The Lisa Wexler Show, WICC 600.
Well, it's so much better to talk about and focus on animals because, you know, they're much more, well, let me put it this way. In every possible way you can think of, I would prefer to talk about animals than humans. Joining us right now is Jim Knox, who is the writer and host of PBS Television's Wild Safari, and he has shared his knowledge of and passion for wildlife with millions of viewers. He's been on every television station that you can think of. He's been featured in The Times. He served as a wildlife consultant for Men's Journal magazine and a guest host right here on Anna and Raven, 99.9 FM, our sister station. And he currently serves as the curator of education at Connecticut's Beardsley Zoo, where he directs the education and wildlife conservation programs for this zoo. Jim Knox, hi, and welcome to the Lisa Wexler Show. I'm so happy you're here.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks for hosting. This is great.
So tell me about, you're the co-creator of something called the Conservation Discovery Corps. What is that?
Yeah, the Conservation Discovery Corps is a great, talented group of young people. These are high school students who are getting their feet wet and rolling up their sleeves and diving into conservation right here in Connecticut. And we have high school students in this program, about 60 of them. And we... About 2008, so back 12 years ago or so, we recognized a distinct need for getting young people involved in hands-on conservation. So when they want to become veterinarians or PhDs, work in, you know, in conservation in any capacity, they really needed that skill set. And so we get them out in the wild. They work here at the zoo, they teach here at the zoo, but they get out into the wild and they help endangered species.
You know, it's so fantastic. I have to tell you, we've become so impossible in not giving our teenagers the right kind of experiences. Like years ago, my son is 33 now, but years ago, he wanted to volunteer at the Humane Society, and he was, 15 or 16, and he was able to help out, and he was able to help give them leukemia shots and whatever it was he was able to do there. And then he was told that they had a new policy that due to insurance, nobody under 18 could help. And it was just terrible, Jim. It was terrible because when I was a kid, I had so many hands-on experiences. I didn't have to worry about legalese and CYA and liability. People would give me a chance to get my hands on things. This is a wonderful thing you're doing.
You know, Lisa, you're absolutely right. I remember as well, you know, when we were kids, we could do things with greater latitude. And now kids largely are constrained in that regard. But what we have here is a setup where they have the mentoring in place from their older students, which is wonderful because those older high school students, those college bound students, they're rock stars to the freshmen and sophomores. And they have great staff supervision. And they work with veterinarians, they work with curators, they go out in the wild and work with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service right here in Connecticut. So we always say we wanted a program like that when we were kids.
So, Jim Knox, if a parent or a grandparent is listening right now, is there room in this Conservation Discovery Corps? How would an interested, you know, young person find out about it and sign up for it?
Thanks, Lisa, for that intro. So we definitely want to speak with those students, those parents and grandparents. Right now with COVID, we're in a new sort of framework where we're still talking to students and we're advising them, and we are very gradually bringing students back on grounds here. We have not yet welcomed our first high school students back on grounds, but we anticipate doing that later this summer. However, if they are interested, the program really is a winter classroom program and then a summer on grounds program and in the field program. So if they're interested, they can jump on our website, beardsleyzoo.org, and they can speak with myself, my colleague Jackie, and we can get them rolling.
beardsleyzoo.org, and then you can find your way around the website to Conservation Discovery Corps. That's the name.
Correct.
Of the
yeah. Yeah. And
that's,
if they just
really
want to
important.
Jump, there's a, it is. And there's a tab on there just for the number 4 teens, and that'll get them where they need to go.
Excellent. So I want to hear, tell me a little bit about the variety of animals at the Beardsley Zoo and how they are all doing. Talk to us about
Thank
the animals.
You.
Let's get to know them. Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. We have about 120 species right now. We've got over 300 individual large animals. And when you count the hissing cockroaches and the brook trout, little guys, we've got over 1,000 animals in our care. They're fascinating. They're remarkable. And they're doing well. Thank you. They're really doing well. A lot of the animals we think missed all of our guests, because when we would walk around, they'd look at us with keen fascination, and now they could care less. Now they're looking at all the guests who come in each day, about 1,000 people a day, and they're very much attuned to the public vibe, which is great.
You know, that's an interesting conversation. We're chatting with Jim Knox, who knows so much and is at the Beardsley Zoo. So I hosted a science show for 7 years, a science radio show for talented kids, and one of the science projects these two young women did was on the stereotypical behaviors of the primates at the Bronx Zoo. And what that meant was not stereotypes the way you and I use the word, but this has a very specific meaning in animal studying. And they were studying the extent to which animals who were viewed might be under more stress and pick at themselves or defecate in weird ways or just exhibit signs of stress versus not being watched. And they concluded that for the great apes that they were looking at, that it was more stressful for them to be watched than not. And I've often wanted to talk with someone like you, in your experience, which is healthier for the animals? And is there a variety? And what do you think about that research?
Wow, a lot of great questions there. And if I get off track, because I can talk, rein me in, okay?
me too.
So when it comes to studying animals, there is so much to learn, Lisa. And what we know now in 2020 is light years ahead of what we knew in 1995, for example. And we know that animals, just like people, can suffer stress. They can sustain stress and they can function, but it's our job and our role as science-oriented individuals and as science-informed individuals to make the best possible choices for animals and people alike. So what I mean by that is we're looking at the animal welfare front and center. We have an animal welfare committee here. We work with our colleagues around the country and around the world and saying we have not only wild release programs for the animals where we can get them back in the wild, but when the animals are here in our care, we're going to do our utmost to provide outstanding care for them, not just good care, but outstanding care. So we do assessments on the animals, veterinary assessments, behavioral assessments. We have a robust enrichment program for them, and we're giving them enrichment every day. And we give enrichment to, no joke, not only the primates and the cats, but the snakes, the rats.
Really?
I mean,
what does it look like Jim, what does it look like to enrich a snake's life? Tell me about that. What is that?
Thank you. So what? Now I'm going to go full geek on you, right? And I'm an animal geek, so here I go.
Okay.
So snakes have a really refined sense of smell, and when we look at enrichment, we always want to look at the sensory abilities of the animals. You know, how they take in their world, how do they view their world, smell their world, touch and taste their world. And with snakes in particular, many have a good sense of vision, but they all have a great sense of smell. So when we do enrichment for snakes, we do olfactory or scent enrichment, and we might do that with something like a vanilla extract or maybe the scent from a rat or a mouse or a fish or a crab or something like that. And then we might place that in different places in the animal's habitat so that they have to range to explore and forage. And then when it comes time to feed them, we might spice that up with a little scent that they enjoy.
That's really nice. So circling back, do you have any primates, by the way, at the Beardsley Zoo?
We do. Our primates, we have New World primates or New World monkeys here at the zoo. In fact, Lisa, you reminded me. Thanks for reining me in. Yes, when it comes to our primates in particular, we have black-handed spider monkeys with new spacious exhibit, which is just a year old. I think next week it's a year old. And this exhibit features Gilligan and Titi, and these are endangered black-handed spider monkeys. They're highly intelligent, highly curious. They're wonderful. And we have to give them our utmost. And what that means and what that looks like is choice and access. So they can stay indoors in the AC if they want. On a warm day, they want to come out and enjoy the sunshine. They can come out. In fact, I just answered a question from a guest the other day, literally yesterday. And he said, we didn't see the spider monkeys. What's the deal? Can we see them? And I said, you know, it's really up to them. because they can come out when they want, but indoors they have privacy.
So they do. So this concept of privacy for primates is a real thing. It's not a made-up thing. It's a real thing.
It absolutely is real, because if you think about it, you know, primates, they're social creatures, and social creatures need downtime. You know, we're social creatures.
Do.
We need downtime.
Yes. So it's so the idea of being watched, if they are choosing when they want to be watched, then hopefully they have less of these stereotypical behaviors that would indicate stress. Hopefully.
That's correct. And that is correct. And that's what we see. We see that borne out in our research. You know, we do passive observational research. We work with Fairfield University, and we've worked with other schools throughout Connecticut, New York, and beyond to watch the animals and observe them, not just for tens of hours, but for hundreds or even thousands of hours on an ongoing basis.
So we're chatting with Jim Knox of the Beardsley Zoo. Jim, what do you think is the mission of a zoo today?
Well, we are, as Connecticut's Beardsley Zoo is a member, an accredited member of the AZA, which is the Association of Zoos and Aquariums. And in the old days, in decades past, zoos would take animals out of the wild and exhibit them for public enjoyment or curiosity. That was really their only function, their only mission. We are a nonprofit, and as a nonprofit, we're science-based, and we are conservation-based. What that means for us is a four-pillar mission. It's conservation, education, research, and guest engagement. So what that means for the animals is we work to protect them in the wild. So most people don't know, but I thank you for the opportunity to share it. When folks come into Connecticut's Beardsley Zoo, a portion of the proceeds from every ticket sold goes toward our conservation work in the wild. So when they come and visit the leopards and tigers here, they're supporting their wild counterparts in northern Asia and in northern China as well.
And in an ideal world, Jim Knox, how much land should the animals that currently are in Beardsley Zoo have to be roaming? I mean, obviously, we're never going to be able to create a habitat that looks like the freedom of being out in the wild. But do you sometimes go to work and say, I wish we could double our acreage? That would make such a difference in their lives. Or is it not about that? I'm curious to know.
Well, no, it's a really great question, Lisa. And it's hard to give a succinct answer because it's more of a conversation. But I'll tell you in short that I always, and I know I speak for others whom I work with and others who love animals and love nature, you always want more for them. And we're always striving to give them more. And what that looks like and feels like, we currently have 36 acres within our gates, but we own additional acreage into Beardsley Park, more than 20 acres. So we are actively involved in raising funds to expand into the new zone and out into the park where we own that land. And right now we're in a capital campaign to raise funding for our Amur tigers to expand their exhibit nearly threefold. And that'll be wonderful. And we're already more than $1 million into that campaign. So we're doing great.
So, and then what you would do is essentially that land, instead of being able to be walked on and enjoyed by the public, by people, that land would be set aside for the animals.
In essence, we'd have more land for the animals. We'd have walkways through and around so people could see the animals. But yes, we'd expand that. And that's what we'd expand the land for the animals. And that's what our master plan calls for, that expansion. But I agree with you. I wish we lived in a kind of world where we had more wild places. I will tell you, there's a global initiative to establish 30% of our planet as forever wild. And it's called 30 by 30. By 2030, we're looking to establish that. And countries like Costa Rica are leading the way with more than 25% of their country set aside forever for wildlife.
Is that right? Wow. Well, they're smart because for them, they've established this reputation as being an ecotourist site. So when they can say that, they can brag about it and bring more dollars in for their economy. So they've linked it to prosperity. There are so many countries that are short-sighted. They think that it is anti-prosperity, but really it isn't, right? It isn't.
You're absolutely right. You know, when done wisely, it enhances the well-being of the local population, the local people, the government of the host country, and the animals as well. In fact, by setting aside vast tracts of wild lands, you clean up the air because the trees recycle the carbon dioxide and deliver clean oxygen. You clean up your waterways, and you have ecological benefits that trickle down to the humans as well, not just the animals.
So, Jim Knox, I think we could go on forever. I just want to ask one more question, which is, you've got this tiger, right? What's the tiger's name?
We have two tigers. We have Rika and Zaya, and they're sisters. They were born here.
They're sisters. They're born here. When I went to the Beardsley Zoo, now, I admit it was a long time ago, but I saw the tigers, and they were walking against the side of the cage, in other words, the side of the fence. It wasn't per se a cage, but it was a fenced-in area, and they were just pacing and pacing and pacing. And I have to tell you, Jim Knox, I walked away, and I was so sad. I have that memory, that visual memory in my head. I just felt so sad for the tigers to be pacing and pacing and pacing against that enclosure. Does it still look that way today? I know it was a long time ago.
I don't know exactly when you came here, Lisa, but I can tell you that we expanded the exhibit twofold, so 100% expansion, about 10 years ago. And in the interim, we've also added different features to the exhibit, enhanced water features and plantings. So we have trees in the exhibit and that sort of thing. We also, like I said, we're expanding it threefold. So I will tell you that tigers in particular, because they roam vast wild spaces, a male tiger could have more than 100,000 square mile territory. So tigers need that, you know, they need a lot of space to roam. So I agree with you, but I'd love to host you here so we could do a behind the scenes when conditions permit.
Done.
And then we could have a longer conversation.
Oh, that invitation, I'm there. Do I have to wait for COVID to be in the rearview mirror to come? Is that what I have to wait for?
Well, let's chat, because there are things we can do this summer that I think would still be a lot of fun, and I think we'd really enjoy it. So let's try to get you here this summer, and we can always come back after that too.
I'm going to take you up on that. Jim Knox, thank you so much. Jim Knox of the Beardsley Zoo and writer and host for PBS TV's Wild Safari. I know you're a treasure to the community. When I told people you were coming on, I got all these whoops and hollers. So thank you very, very much for being on the show today. Really, so much appreciated.
Thanks so much, Lisa. We love it. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll be right back. More of the Lisa Wexler Show coming up.